Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. First on the docket, a lot to talk about grand juries. Apparently, they're convening one in Idaho. Let's explain what it means. Second, prosecutors take a jab at the defense and more in the Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell matters. Third, Bitcoin being offered for a crime? And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. I apologize for not being able to put up a show yesterday. Logistically, things just didn't work out once I had left to go take care of some of that lawyer stuff I had to do. And it turned out Scott can't do a lot of this stuff on his own because he forgot to turn on the volume button. Ooh, I hate when I do that. Anyway, we are here today. Please join us this evening for our live that starts at 6 p.m. Mountain Time at both Facebook and YouTube. Please join us. Immediately after that, all our Patreon members, we will gather together and talk about whatever you want to talk about. All right. First on the docket, grand juries. What the heck is a grand jury? There's been some reports, some speculation that there is going to be a grand jury convened in regards to the death of JJ and Ty Lee. Okay, what does that really mean? Okay, you have a grand jury, which is made up of members of a community, normally between 15 and 21 jurors. They are selected just like any other juror who's going to sit on a petite jury. A petite jury is not a grand jury. A petite jury is a jury that hears the case in court. It's 12 jurors maximum. It could be as little as six in, for example, misdemeanor or civil cases. Once the jurors for the grand jury is selected, they will then meet. Sometimes it can be as much as once a week, or it could be once a month. It really just depends on how much work needs to be done. Well, what is the role of a grand jury? Well, there's really two roles that a grand jury can utilize. First, and for example, in the federal system, you're entitled to be indicted by a grand jury. It's basically a screening device to see if there is probable cause. So a United States attorney, when they have a grand jury, they usually say, hey, we know the grand jury is going to meet on this particular date. They put in their request and say, hey, I need 15 minutes of that grand jury's time. Let's say, for example, there is a prohibited person with a weapon. The detective would come in and say, I'm the lead detective. I've reviewed the reports in this particular case and the now defendant. We want him charged with possession of a weapon by a prohibited person. And they would present a prima facie case for that. They would basically present some evidence as to all the elements that the defendant was found in possession of a firearm. That firearm was functioning. It was able to expel a round out of the barrel, and also that the person had a criminal record, which prohibited him from that. Boom. Grand jury hears that. They get a piece of paper saying, do you, grand jury, agree that the defendant should be indicted? They all say yes. They sign it, and it is a true bill. An indictment is done. That's normally the case for a grand jury. The second is more of an investigative role. That is where there, say, for example, there is an investigation and maybe there's witnesses. And I've seen this very successful, particularly in gang cases. The grand jury has subpoena power, and the district attorney and through their investigators would say, hey, grand jurors, we'd like to have this information. Would you sign this subpoena so that these documents are returned and requested? We need that for our investigation. Yes, they can do that. They can also hear testimony from witnesses that they want to hear from. And the thing about that is that people can show up and they have to testify. Now, certainly they can assert their Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination if they believe they're going to do that, but they can also basically be given immunity as well. Now, the key to a grand jury is that it's done in secret. The grand jurors should never have their identities revealed. Additionally, the grand jurors can never talk about what took place in the grand jury room. It just simply is not done. The reason why they do it in secret is that you don't want to tip somebody off as to an investigation, and you want people to be able to come forward and talk freely as it relates to a particular case. And if a witness knows that all of their information that they said is going to be, you know, told to everybody, they may not be as forthcoming and candid with the information that they know. Now, I've attended several grand juries at the state level. At the federal level, defense counsel are not permitted with their witness and or client in the room. In the state level, you can sit there, but you can't ask any questions. But if your client wants to ask a question, then basically you're allowed to be excused. You're still sworn to secrecy, okay? And the only people that are allowed in the grand jury room are people who are authorized to be there. In fact, when somebody comes and leaves, they make a record of it and say, we have a quorum. We have enough grand jurors. The only authorized people in this grand jury room are the prosecutor, investigators, and authorized witnesses at this time. If somebody gets up and leaves, even like an investigator, they make a record of that, so there is no taint whatsoever. But once that grand jury hands down an indictment, at most you'll get a review for probable cause. Simply the judge reads the grand jury indictment and they find probable cause. Not a big deal. Obviously, if the state proceeds by complaint and information, you're entitled to a preliminary hearing. But when you have a grand jury, there's no preliminary hearing because, well, they've already found probable cause. So remember, if people are talking about grand jurors appearing or witnesses appearing before a grand jury, and normally when people are subpoenaed to a grand jury, there's usually a little warning that they should not tell anyone other than their attorney that they are in fact being subpoenaed for a grand jury. Once again, it goes back to the secrecy. It goes to tipping people off, potential for destruction of evidence. So people that are talking about what's taking place by the grand jury should be very cautious in doing so because it really cuts to the heart and the credibility of the grand jury process. Now, next on the docket, prosecutors in the Lori Vallow, Chad DeBell matter take a little swipe at the defense. Now, as you may recall, there's been lots of issues about discovery in this particular case. The defense has made claims that they haven't received discovery and that the defense is somehow having this evidence withheld from them. So the prosecution now in their fourth supplemental discovery disclosure says, hey, defense counsel, you can come and inspect and copy and photograph any items described in Idaho Criminal Rules of Procedure 16B4 by simply making prior arrangements with the Madison County Prosecutor's Office or the law enforcement agency holding such evidence. Now, in this particular case, says the state may also utilize the following evidence at trial, all of which has either previously been provided or is attached here too. And here they make specific reference to an addendum F, which identifies two analytical reports provided to this office on April 29th, 2021 by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Now, as I've stated before, normally, discovery is an informal process. You don't bother the court with it. You simply receive an email saying, hey, there's discovery. You can download it. You can come pick it up, whichever is the preferred method. But the fact that the district attorneys are filing with the court saying, hey, come get this discovery, is because they're tired of the defense and the defense playing games and crying foul that there are some sort of ethical lapse by the prosecutors and that they're somehow withholding evidence and not timely releasing it. I kind of like what the prosecutor's doing in this particular case. As we've talked about previously, you know, at a certain point, the prosecutor just gets tired of being called a liar and unethical. So he is going to just shove it down their throat, and the defense will never be able to claim that they didn't receive something in a timely manner. Now, what else is going on in the Lori Vallow, Chad DeBell matter? Well, there's been a couple of subpoenas that have been issued in regards to a hearing on the 9th. Now, one of the subpoenas goes to Nate Eaton, who is a reporter with the East Idaho News, who has been covering this case like they should have. Very straightforward, not getting into a lot of speculation, simply laying out the facts. The defense apparently subpoenaed Mr. Eaton, and more than likely would be called to testify as to the publicity, the curiosity of the public's need and right to know, and more than likely the circulation as it relates to that particular newspaper. All things that would be relevant as it relates to a motion for a change of venue. I'm not particularly excited one way or other that witnesses have been subpoenaed. At least we know somebody's making some forward progress, and we may actually have a hearing on June 9th. And if we do, guess what? We will bring it to you. Now, the other issue that has come up is that there has been some blood-like substance that the DNA would like to test. This was a blood-like substance that was found at an apartment. We don't get into specific details because, well, we just don't know yet, at least by the description from the prosecutors. The prosecutors are saying, hey, we want to test these items of evidentiary value, but the defense is now objecting. And they're simply stating, we're going to test this, and judge, kind of like we've talked about before, tell the defense to get their expert available so that we can get this done as expeditiously as possible. I completely anticipate that this will be granted. The prosecution has a right to present their case. If there is going to be something that is consumed, i.e. consumptive testing throughout the process, the defense doesn't have a right to stop it. They simply have a right to be present with an expert to see if, in fact, it was done correctly. This is a no-brainer. I'm not even sure why we have to have hearings on this, but the defense is asking for a hearing on everything. All right, let's take a quick recess. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, Bitcoin being offered for a crime. Can you imagine such a thing? I'm sure everyone's heard of Bitcoin cryptocurrency. Originally, it was being used for the, you know, black market. Now it's become pretty much mainstream. A lot of people are putting their money there, but it has a liquidity problem. We won't even get into that, but, you know, buy Bitcoin, Dogecoin, do what you got to do. Well, a man in Tennessee apparently, allegedly, offered to pay somebody a couple of Bitcoin, and they go for about $50,000 a piece. And that's actually, you know, it's a lot better than what you've seen a lot of these cases where we talked about, where somebody offers to have a spouse whacked for like $5,000. At least somebody's stepping up with some real money. Now, for those of you that got offended, that was a joke, all right? That was a joke. Well, Nelson Paul Replogle, he lives in Tennessee. He has been arrested. And according to the FBI, the Bureau passed on the nature of this threat to the Knox County Sheriff's Department. And they wanted to check on the woman's well-being, because apparently Mr. Replogle wanted to have his wife killed while she was off at a veterinarian's office taking care of a pet appointment. The information provided was very specific about a date, time, vehicle, make, model, and color of the car, according to authorities. Authorities then sought to trace the Bitcoin payment used on the transaction. Investigators say they were able to determine that the Bitcoin wallets used in the transaction were Coinbase wallets. From there, they contacted the company Coinbase, which complied with a subpoena for the owner and transaction history for those digital wallets. Authorities say the digital trail led to Mr. Replogle. His registration information included a photo ID and pictures, according to the police. The FBI claimed they also discovered that the IP address linked to the account went to his home. Mr. Replogle was being held without a bond. The judge, when making the determination to hold Mr. Replogle without bond, said, while the use of cryptocurrency does not on its own implicate a risk of danger, defendants' alleged use of Bitcoin in connection with locating an individual on the internet to commit a murder for hire suggests he was attempting to avoid detection. In addition, as noted in more detail, the evidence of defendants' dangerousness is demonstrated by the allegations that in arranging the murder for hire, he took affirmative steps to provide specific information regarding his wife's proposed location in furtherance of the plot to kill her. Ladies and gentlemen, how many times have we said this? If you want a divorce, get a divorce. You don't get rid of your spouse by having somebody do bad things to them, okay? If you're worried about the money, guess what? It's money. You can go make more money. I assure you, you can make a lot more money than you ever make while you sit in a prison cell for the rest of your life. And this goes back to, what does somebody that looks like they're going to do something evil look like? You don't know. But like we just talked about Crime Talk Search, guess what? It shows you emails and phone numbers that are associated with a particular person. Maybe you're curious as to why your boyfriend, spouse, friend hasn't given you those email addresses. What are they being used for? Are they used to funnel money off to a Coinbase account? Are they being used to actively engage with somebody on a dating website? Who knows? That's why you need to check people out. All right, next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. But before we get there, who's our dumb criminal contestant from last week? Gail Metwally. All right, she has some spunk for sure. Remember her? She got in a fight with some of her roommates in the house. She set the house on fire, knowing people were in the house, and she went and got a lawn chair, sat in the front yard, and watched it burn. She obviously was charged with attempted murder and arson and is in custody. But Miss Metwally, yes, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day, and we will send you a mug. Now, what can you do with the mug? Well, I don't know. Let's say if there's a fire, you could put water in this and you could put the fire out, or at least try to, so you maybe don't look as culpable as sitting there watching the house burn down. Now, as we've said before, if you would like Crime Talk gear, simply hit the link there to Spring and you can get all your gear. All right, now back to our dumb criminal contestant of the day, Jamie Lynn Hinneker, 39. That's right. She was working at a movie theater in Mankato. That's right. It's about 80 miles from Minneapolis. And what kind of trouble did Miss Hinneker get herself into? Well, it was apparently very well thought out. She would work at the movie theater and she would sell drugs. Yeah, that's right. When people would come to the concession stand and they would ask for a bag of popcorn, hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more, say no more. That's right. On the inside, they would get a little bit of cocaine along with their popcorn. What does Miss Hinneker's trouble come from? Well, she was selling to an undercover narcotics officer. Bad. Ooh, that's trouble. That's right. You're going down hard for sure. Miss Hinneker, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. Why? Because you're selling drugs. Yes, everybody knows that's against the law. But second, to be so stupid, to do it at work, and the fact that you could get your employer in trouble like that, and everyone else that works there, you put all of their jobs in jeopardy. So Ms. Hinneker, not only are you a dumb criminal contestant today, you're just stupid. All right. Thanks for watching today. Please join us this evening for our live show. And then for all our Patreon members, we'll go live immediately after that. And remember, you can call in and talk. We'll talk about what you want to talk about because it's your show. We'll see you later tonight. Have a wonderful day.